Los, and welcome to episode 38 of the Jacobin Sports Show. I am Matthew Miranda, joined, as always, by the wonder of it all, Jonah Birch. Jonah Birch, you were lucky enough to attend a historic night in Milwaukee recently when you saw the New York Knicks fall behind by 21 points and win the game by 20-something. It is, yes. I haven't been able to confirm this yet, but that might be the biggest swing in any Knicks game in a victory ever. To be down that much and win by that much, you have truly lived a good life to have been in attendance for that one. How was it seeing that Knicks Bucks game?
Well, so first of all, the stadium is very nice. Yeah. You know, the Fiserv.
It's pretty new, right? Only like a couple years old?
Yep, it's very new.
Yeah.
It was Army Appreciation Night.
Yes.
And they began with a fake induction ceremony involving like a 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was fun. You know, I really enjoyed that. That was good. And then, look, to be honest, it was like it was the Bucks B team at best. And actually, tonight, a very similar team just beat the Sixers.
Same.
So, and I believe Semi Ojeleye shot 4 for 4.
The workout Mamba hit 3 threes in that game. All 3 of his threes.
That's going to be half his 3-pointers for the year, I promise you. Yeah, so Grayson Allen went off again tonight, but in the first half of the Knicks game.
Yep.
And then in the second half, it was like...
I will point out that the Bucks B team did include the reigning MVP and their all-star point guard, Drew Holiday.
So, first of all, Giannis is not the reigning MVP. You know, he's the MVP of our hearts. I thought Nikola Jokic is the reigning MVP.
Oh, I think that's purely a racist construct. I think since Giannis finals MVP you're right. He was the two-time MVP before that, and then he was the finals MVP. But you're right. Nikola
Jokic. What year is it? You know, let me ask you this. So, okay, so the Markieff Morris, yes, Jokic dust up.
Yeah.
Who's wrong and who's right in that?
Morris is wrong and Jokic is right.
See, I agree. I know, people are going to say this is anti-Heat bias. It's not true.
It is. For me, it is. But it's also that Markieff Morris is wrong.
I mean that was a rough foul, you know, to begin with. Jokic retaliated. That was not good, obviously.
But you know what they say.
It was a delightful day on NBA Twitter.
Yeah.
I wish
don't
that
start
I spoke
none.
Serbian. Yeah.
Won't be none.
Markieff started it. That's right.
Markieff started it and Jokic finished it.
That's right.
I think Morris is lucky that it ended where it did. Because he went down like he got tasered or something. Morris was down for the count. I have no problem with the Jokic did. I would like more of that. I am not at all like a Madison Avenue baby boomer. Like, I need the players to hate each other. I don't. I think it's a better league and a better world when they are allied the way that they are. And I like that they like each other and it's less. But, I mean, if you're just going to run at somebody and take an obnoxious foul. And, like, to be fair, the Morris twins are not exactly like strangers to the principal's office themselves. So I have no problem at all with what Jokic did. It was I liked it as an NBA fan who grew up. I'm not saying I want the past to come back.
Yeah.
But it's nice every now and then to remember, like, it is a contact sport.
Yeah. Yeah, Robert Parrish punching Bill Laimbeer in the face. You know.
We can all get behind that.
We could all get behind that. That's true.
Now, are you clotheslining Scottie Pippen?
Yeah. Yeah, that was those were great days. Do you have a fondness for Marcus Morris because of his time with the Knicks, or is it?
I do. Yeah. Yeah, because that year they brought in, when they missed KD and Kyrie, they brought in Randall and Marcus Morris. Marcus Morris came late. He had made a verbal agreement with the Spurs and he backed out of it and got a better deal with the Knicks, which, first of all, we loved just because take that, Spurs. You've had enough in life.
Pure resentment. Yeah.
But Marcus Morris was brilliant. He led the league in three-point shooting the whole time with the Knicks. He was better than Randall that first year. I was wrong in retrospect, but like I wrote a piece right before he was traded. I didn't want to trade him, even though everyone knew like he's probably not coming back and you can get a draft pick, which turned into quickly. I didn't want to trade him because I was just so tired of watching shit basketball. And Marcus Morris could play. Like, he was just a good player. He was tough. That first preseason, he bonked some Washington Wizard right in the head with a basketball. It became a very famous, like, New York Morris thing. I love Marcus. I don't care that much about Markieff. You know, he is what he is. But yeah, I love Mark. I will always ride with Marcus Morris as a basketball player. As a speaker of public thoughts, right. No. But as a baller, I love his game.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. John Birch, there's much to get into today. We're going to talk basketball because that's what we do. But also, there's a lot of nonsense, just nonsense going around the world of sports. And I mean, the initial like epidermal layer of nonsense is obvious, but I want to go a little deeper because I see concerns, both political and personal, with some of the nonsense that is going on in the world of sports now. Do you want to open with some NBA, or do you want to get right into
the nonsense? I'm excited to see where this is going. What nonsense are we talking about?
Well, the nonsense of the day is Aaron Rodgers, who was the nonsense. So first we had the nonsense a few days ago where Rodgers went on the Pat McAfee show reveal to the world that when he said he was immunized in response to being asked this summer if he was vaccinated, and he said, yes, I'm immunized. What he really meant was, no, I'm not vaccinated. And then, so today he blames the media for not following up better on the question, which, like, fair. Okay. Like, that is fair. But, I mean, you're still transparently a liar about that. And it matters. Like, I don't have a problem with a cheeky workplace lie that, like, sticks it to the man. But when there is a global respiratory pandemic and you are lying about the status of your health and potentially jeopardizing other people. And remember, like, if you remember when this all hit the world of sports, it was when Rudy Gobert did that playful, you know, rubbing on all the microphones.
Right.
So we know it's contagious. We know what it's done. Aaron Rodgers. So that's the initial nonsense. Today, Rodgers doubles down on the nonsense by mentioning that he's in the crosshairs of the woke mob, because this is clearly an issue of faux leftists against the rest of the world. Then he opened, and I love when people do this, by which I mean I hate it. He opened by saying this, quote, I made some comments that people might have felt were misleading. And to anybody who felt misled by those comments, I take full responsibility for those comments. This is what happens when you grow up in a country of oversaturated, toxic, liberal tripe. It has all the hallmarks. Everything I hate about neoliberalism is in this comment. First, I made some comments that people might have felt were misleading.
Right.
Is not at all as the same as saying I made comments that were misleading. So he's already hedging on that. To anybody who felt misled, so not anybody with a brain, to anybody who bothered to be misled by this, I take full responsibility for those comments. This to me reminds me, there's that kind of infamous video of, it happened with Joe Manchin this week too, but Dianne Feinstein was at her Sunrise. Office.
Yeah.
Yes. Like this classic idea. So when Rodgers finishes with, I take full responsibility for those comments, it's this Orwellian twist it's a way of saying, I take no responsibility for anything.
That's right.
I'm not admitting that I misled you. I'm not admitting that I apologize to anybody. I only kind of apologize to someone who may have been upset. And to close it with, like, you know, I take full responsibility. It's the literal opposite of what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, I got to say, when I got to Wisconsin, it wasn't clear whether Aaron Rodgers. Yeah,
you're right in the heart of it.
I am right in the middle of it. That's exactly right. You know, we're having conversations all the time on street corners, at the water cooler, you know, everywhere. So I was talking to the local Packers fans, and I was saying, you're going to miss him when he's gone. You know, don't cherish these moments as someone who who lived through Tom Brady's departure from New England. It, you know, you're never going to have it so good. And people were like, yeah, it was clear that the fondness was had quickly dissipated. And no. So after all this happened, people would be like, yeah, you see why? I mean, now you see where we were coming from, right? And I said, yes, I do. Now I finally see it. I mean, the comments about my friend Joe Rogan, I made these decisions yes. in consultation. They're beyond caricature, right? I mean, what do you even Dr. say about
Joe
that?
Rogan, MD.
Right.
Right.
But the whole, like, I'm going to host Jeopardy. I'm so thoughtful. I'm an iconoclast. It's just like Kyrie. You know, I march to the beat of my own drum.
Did you hear him? Did you hear how he contrasted himself and Kyrie?
I did hear that. Yeah.
Crazy flat earther like Kyrie, right. who's honest about what he feels. I am a critical thinker.
Yep. Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, and then it's like, oh, so you discovered homeopathic medicine and ivermectin or whatever. And, right, you know, those are really original, ridiculous ideas to have. And it's sad because, you know, he and his partner, what's her, his girlfriend is the actress. I'm getting it wrong.
Shoshana.
There was some kind of vague left-wing tinge to them at some point. I think she spoke at a Bernie rally or something.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, but we're back again at this, at the dynamic where it really isn't about politics to you at all, right? I mean, nor do I actually, despite the 500 pages of research that you presented to the NFL, I don't really think it's about your views on medicine, right? Or science, or it really is about demonstrating to the world and to yourself that you can't be controlled, that you won't just do what you think. And what ends up happening once again is that you end up resorting to the most cliched, fucking trite, corny conspiracy theories, shit that you found on the dumbest corners of the internet. It's offensive in a way that obviously, for me at least, of course it's about COVID, but it also isn't just about COVID, right? It's about something else as well, which is this approach to the world and to these very serious questions. I mean, it really, it's pathological and it depresses me. It honestly depresses me.
I can't get past the obviousness of Aaron Rodgers pretending that this is some like critical battle over autonomy and doesn't have a word to say about like the abortion law in Texas, like doesn't have a word to say about it. Like I we've talked about that, with other people at other points. Can you think of an athlete who spent his entire career in one place and had the success that Rodgers has had and is going probably out of town, not due to a diminishment in his athletic performance, who will be as not missed as Aaron Rodgers?
It's so bizarre.
Anytime I think of a player who had that run of success in one place, either they leave like with the blessing, like so when Ray Bourque left the Bruins and won his Stanley Cup with, I think it was Colorado, like people were happy for Ray Bourque. Like he had done his time. He had done his whole career. You have also people like, Kobe or Dirk Nowitzki who stay the whole time with one team and they're just beloved no matter how it ends. Like Dirk missed the playoffs probably his last 5 or 6 years. The Lakers really kind of were not good at all Kobe's last few years, but they're still loved just for who they are. And in baseball, I think Derek Jeter and I can't think of an athlete who stayed in one place, was this awesome for this long. He was MVP last year. Like he's still at an elite level in a small market that like worships, Packer linemen. And it sounds like you're saying like they're not really going to miss him when he's gone.
No. And did you see Jordan Love in the game the other night?
I did not. I heard it was not something that I missed necessarily.
If I was a Packers fan, I would be dreading the future. No, but you're totally right. Like, sports stars around here, I mean, the way people revere Giannis is, it's kind of delightful. Like, there's something so sweet and wholesomely Midwestern about their love for him. You know, which I which I appreciate, but totally right. And you know, obviously, this is why it's sad. It makes me sad.
Moving on to another warped, metastasized commodification of the individual, we get to the Las Vegas Raiders, a franchise that for decades has been celebrated and literally profited off of the idea that they are rebellious, they do their own thing, they don't even really care about the NFL rules, the Raiders are the Raiders. So first we had the John Gruden situation, where Gruden, I guess he was fired. I don't remember now if he resigned to avoid being fired or if he was fired. But, you know, uncovered making racist and misogynistic and homophobic comments. I'll come back to John Gruden because this all actually does tie together. But first, there were two sad and concerning stories to come out of the Raiders. One was the arrest of Henry Ruggs III, who was allegedly driving over 150 miles an hour when he and was drunk and crashed into the back of a car with a young 23-year-old woman and her dog, who were both killed. Ruggs is facing a long time in prison. It's a very sad story. It hits me personally, and it makes me sad not only... I mean, we're adults. There's the obvious sadness, of course, and not to be understated, the sadness of an innocent person sitting in a car and being killed by someone who made a terrible decision. Like, my heart, you know, I go out to her. I think of her. I think of her loved ones. I think of her last moments. Like, it's awful. I was also struck by the mob response to basically writing now Ruggs off as a throw away the key. Like, what a monster. And I have to say that, like, This may sound different depending on one's background or perspective, but as someone who was arrested for the same thing that Henry Ruggs was arrested for when I was younger, I remember in court, this really went badly for me in court because I got this one judge who was renowned as an asshole in that town, and the prosecutor and the defense attorney both wanted to give me like just minimums because I had no record or anything. And the judge was very pissed and was like looking for a reason to give me something more. And he said at one point in the hearing, well, I don't understand. What I don't understand is, you know, why was the defendant driving? I was driving the wrong way I was driving east on a westbound road. And I was fortunate that it got called in, and I was fortunate that I was arrested because I could have done exactly the same thing that Henry Ruggs did. And it's dumb, absolute dumb luck that it happened to him and not to me. In court, when the judge said, I don't understand why the defendant was going the wrong way on a one-way road, I, trying to be honest, said I was drunk. The whole courtroom, the whole courtroom bursts into laughter, which is not what I, not, it wasn't what I wanted, it wasn't what I needed. The judge did not laugh, but... The point being,
what did your lawyer say? Your lawyer is going, shut the fuck up. Shut up. Don't hear me.
It's a public defender in New York State. You know, the infrastructure has been just eaten out. No, she was good. She was fine. But it's really important, I think, for people. And I think this applies beyond Ruggs, but it's specific to remember that it applies in cases like him, too. We have a society that will build up, in particular, athletes to these elite social positions. We put them on pedestals. We bend the rules for them. Everybody knows it. Everybody's cool with it. Everybody's hot for it. Like, we all have this celebrity culture, athlete culture thing. At the same time, when people are arrested, particularly for certain crimes, particularly for crimes that we haven't committed or we can't imagine ourselves committing, or I think in this case, don't like to imagine ourselves committing because a lot of people drive drunk and don't get caught for it, Henry Ruggs doesn't cease to be a human being when he goes to prison for this. And if you consider what the prison system does to most people in this country, how it's not about rehabilitation, it's not about trying to help a person become better adapted to society when they get out. It basically is like a throw away the key, and like whatever happens, you know, you're probably coming out with a lot with new troubles. It's really important, I think, not to lose sight of the fact that like Henry Ruggs is still a person. He's still a young man. He's still someone who, regardless of where he is, probably has a long life ahead of him. Yep. And if you just throw away the key and forget that this is a person who can learn and who can grow, then I don't know what the point is of pretending to have any either justice system or prison system or everybody who's working in prisons and outside of prisons to help people rehabilitate and get educated and have something to adapt to other than just the violent infrastructure that is prison. I pissed off some people by saying this. Some people were like, you're defending him. You're missing the point. The point is about what happened to the girl. I don't think it has to be one or the other. I just really would like people to remember that we all know someone who's done what Henry Ruggs did.
Sure.
We don't all know someone who got the outcome that he did. But if you're not going to write off yourself and your loved ones and everyone in your life who does this, then I don't think it's fair to do it to this person just because, again, because I feel, I don't know if this is a stretch, but I feel like this is, I'm especially going to go after the liberals again. This is a way I think that liberal Americans play out racism. It's a black football player. I don't have any use for him outside of entertaining me on my TV once a week. Oh, he did this? Fuck him. Throw away the key. He's a monster. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, am I wrong? It's interesting. So first of all, you're absolutely right. We all know people or have ourselves, you know, been in a situation where people are doing exactly this, drunken speeding, and there, but, you know, for the grace of God in terms of slamming into someone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so absolutely. And I'm sure, look, if I was, you know, if I knew that woman or if I was a member of her family, Tina Tinter was her
name.
Thank
you. Thank you.
I would be like, I hope this guy, you know, nothing but the worst things in the world for him. But I'm not. And the reality is that different perspective means that, yeah, I mean, it means for better or worse that I can also see exactly what you're saying, his humanity. And the fact is, he's a 22-year-old guy, right, who suddenly had all this money. And, it, you know, you're, it's not about excusing anything, but it is about saying, we all made terrible mistakes when we were 22. I certainly did. You know, it like,
yeah.
Everyone we know did things that were, that could have turned out similarly disastrously.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so if you can't say that people are not just the worst things they've ever done, the worst things that have happened in their lives. Right. Mm-hmm. But that there can be other things that they live for and that their existence is about, then politics aside, you're lacking a certain level of humanity there, mm-hmm. right? You know, and then politically, of course, I mean, we could spend days, obviously, on the prison system, but it's just very hard to think that what's going to come out of this is any sense of justice. Now, mm-hmm. it's interesting what you're saying. When I was a kid, definitely, I mean, that was a lot of American liberalism. I saw liberals turn against the welfare state, mm-hmm. for the most part, except for some very principled ones, some people who quit the Clinton administration, mm-hmm. you know, really play into the worst kind of, attacks on poor people and
yeah.
racist stereotyping around that. And also, yeah, you know, absolutely, people really embrace certain elements of this kind of law and order outlook. It's interesting that that's your impression of where American liberalism is today, because I don't, at this point, you know, whatever the like ridiculous assumptions and, you know, that a lot of liberals have, I don't for the most part feel like the kind of consensus is still lock them up and throw away the key, right? Which was even in, you know, I remember in 88 when Dukakis was explaining how he's against the death penalty.
Right.
That was the line, right? Lock him up and throw away the key right. as the alternative, you know, and... But so that's interesting that I'm not surprised you got shit for that. And I'm
there's another reason I see it, especially with the liberal crowd. And I first saw this really when the Michael Vick story broke with the dog fighting years ago.
Right.
In this case, the same kinds of people who will tell me every 4 years when there's a presidential election that a vote for in the past I would want to vote for, you know, I was a big fan of Ralph Nader when he ran in 2000.
I thought you were going to say Ross Perot. No, that's not, that wasn't your
thing. I was at 13, the kind of nerdy kid who was so excited on CNN the night that Al Gore and Ross Perot debated each other about NAFTA that I literally taped it and watched it. So I was that kind of a nerd. But nice. No, having supported generally Ralph Nader and the Greens or Bernie Sanders over my life, every 4 years, my Democrat liberal friends give me the same crap about how you have to hold your nose and be an adult because with politicians, people aren't perfect.
Yep.
And there's a classism is not the word. There's some ism going on to me where we have presidents who are murderers, who are war criminals, who are rapists, and you are supposed to understand that that's how the world works.
Right.
And when a black athlete commits a crime, those same people, what I would hear people say about Michael Vick, and these were my Democrat, liberal friends, the shit they said about Michael Vick was terrifying and disgusting. Absolutely. And I think, I feel like some of the reaction against Ruggs is kind of similar to that. It's not that it wouldn't happen if it had been a white player also. Like, he would still get it, but there is, I'm just telling you, there's a particular note or flavor of vehemence that emerges from liberal people when this kind of shit happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's so funny. I mean, the Michael Vick, the case was such a, it was such an intense example of it because really it was like, it was the dogs that brought out.
Yes.
The you're standing next to the Ku Klux Klan, you know, protesting this guy. Yeah, right. And so, you know, and so that felt like a very dramatic example of it. Absolutely. Look, I mean, you know, partly it's like American society and American culture loves to get on its moral high horse, right? And denounce. But you're totally right. There is a real hypocritical double standard. And people's ability to love, absolutely love, politicians who have committed the most heinous crimes, and then at the same time, you know, lock someone up and throw away the key, you know, have that be their perspective.
Like, these are the people who will now complain, who during the Trump years would complain about the good old Republican days of, like, Reagan and Bush and Cheney, totally. As if they weren't all fucking monsters. Like, so. Yeah,
absolutely.
So there's the Henry Ruggs part. Because it's the Raiders, there are, of course, a couple other angles similar to this. The Raiders released defensive back Damon Arnette, who was their first-round draft pick, I think, 2 drafts ago, because Arnette, on a TikTok video, was shown handling multiple firearms and repeatedly making death threats towards some unspecified person who was apparently 5 minutes away. What is interesting, if you read or saw Mike Mayock's comments from the press conference after the release, Mike Mayock did all this talking about how, you know, kind of like, woe is the organization because the Ruggs, thing happened and now this happened, and that the Raiders specifically spent more time researching Damon Arnette than like any player they ever drafted before, and they had decided that it was worth the risk. But now, you know, just like the Blackhawks recently in the NHL, like, quickly tried to divest themselves from a problem they obviously created. Now the Raiders very quickly are acting like, well, you know, Damon Arnette, you know, he can figure it out someday, but not with us. And what's funny about this is that Damon Arnette was already facing 2 lawsuits in Las Vegas. One was in October. He was accused, about a month ago, accused of causing bodily injury in a hit-and-run accident that reportedly left the woman involved unconscious and with about $100,000 in medical bills. The second lawsuit accused Arnette of berating an employee at a hotel and casino after he lost his receipt for valet parking. He was also accused of spitting on and poking the employee in the chest. These things happened after he was drafted, and they did all of their research and evidence. And I feel flavors of the Ray Rice thing here, where Arnette was caught on a TikTok video making threats. There's no hiding from the tape. But until it got to that point, like, he already had issues in Ohio, at Ohio State, so many issues that you spent a record amount of money researching him. He's had two lawsuits against him. I don't know what to make of this.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So, I saw that video.
I saw it too.
And I was like,
Did you think it wasn't really a big deal?
I didn't think it was a big deal. I didn't either. I didn't think it was that bad.
He could have been fucking around. Like, I understand the words, but, like, if you watched his... God knows what was going on, but, like, he wasn't menacing. He seemed kind of, like, half amused by whatever was going on. Absolutely. It didn't seem
people
to
fuck
me...
around all the time like that on the internet. And then it's like, oh, he had a gun. And I'm like, oh, wow, an American with a gun. You know, that's a new one.
Again, it's who has the gun is the problem. Again, I think here...
Right.
Again, it's who has the gun. Because I watched it also... And even then, that was the thing that made the Raiders decide suddenly, like, they're a family values organization. And you're the fucking Raiders. You're in Las Vegas because you don't give a shit about tradition, anything. You're always the bad guys. I mean, own it or don't own it. This is even different than the rug situation because literally nobody got hurt. But if you were going to let him go for hurting somebody, wouldn't it be the woman who is unconscious or the valet? Like, who gets so angry in life at a valet that you spit on them and poke them? What could they have done to your car?
Yeah, I mean, of course it's about the context, right?
Yeah,
obviously. Now, can I ask you a question? And I don't mean, if you have more to say about that, then...
No, go for it.
Would you say that the Mets are the Raiders East at this point? Is that what's happening here?
God, I never thought of that, and I don't really want to. Okay. I'm going to acknowledge on the air right now that because I am an optimist, I think that means that I am at heart a pessimist. So I try to be endlessly optimistic about the Mets, and I look at their all the shit that has come out. You know, it wasn't good under the Wilpons, and since Steve Cohen's taken over, there's been just one mortifying culture grotesquerie after another. And now the Mets are getting a lot of crap because they can't find someone to take their job as general manager or, I guess, as president. And they're very much a laughingstock for this. I'm not really bothered by that because I feel like other than Theo Epstein was the one guy that I hoped to, like, throw him the moon and hopefully he takes it. And he didn't. He's got a good life. He doesn't need to be doing that. The Mets are not the Raiders, I think, because sadly, like, the Mets are very sensitive about wanting to present themselves in a very flattering light, and the comedy of them is how far short of that they fall. The Raiders don't want that. The Raiders would be happy, you know, sucking and doing it with a certain Raider panache and style. The Mets don't want to. They just can't seem to help it. And I think it's a little early to get on Steve Cohen, but I understand, like, the guy can't stay off Twitter. His history with hiring high-ranking executives who are later found culpable for sexual harassment very much predates his time with the Mets and goes into his hedge fund affairs as well. So the big question with the Mets is, like, are the Mets representative of just how impossibly toxic pro sports is? Because to go from the Wilpons, who, like, as a Knick fan, I felt better with my owner than the Met fan in me felt with the Wilpons. And now to go to this guy who has wealth that I personally find problematic and that I don't think he should have. It's problematic. Problematic is one word for it.
It is problematic. I mean, problematic is
but also
definitely
who has the really you know, this guy paid the largest fine in SEC history for their business practices. There's been multiple, I think even class action lawsuits about sexual harassment in the culture, and not just underlings. Cohen himself being described by former employees as, you know, cruel, like tyrannical. I mean,
he was a fucking hedge fund manager.
Yes.
That right there means something truly terrible should happen to him.
Yes. You know,
so
yeah.
by definition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, they're not the Raiders because they're not even that cool.
Right. It does feel a little convenient that with the Raiders, you're like, what's wrong with the Raiders? And now we get on the Mets and you're like, the real criminal here is professional sports. You know, the real bad guy, you know, take some responsibility for your franchise.
I'm sorry, Johnny.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Do you think that this franchise will ever be stable as long as Sandy Alderson is there? Because that's the question. You know, they can't find a general manager. No one wants to work there. People can't figure out why. You know, it's not like it's a organization bereft of talent or resources. Or
it's not at all.
It's in New York City. It's, you know, a pretty it's a pretty big team.
Mm-hmm.
But no one wants the job, and people are trying to figure out why. And it does feel like, besides the kind of snake bit, you know, image that it has, that job in particular, now after what's happened in the last couple, it feels like Sandy Alderson is the, you know, is part of the reason.
I think there's a little quasi-collusion going on. I think other owners are happy Cohen is there for his wealth, but not happy. I mean, he was not a lock to be approved even after he made the purchase with the Willapons. There were questions about whether enough owners would sign off on it because of his business practices in the past, because of the allegations against him.
Interesting.
Yeah,
you think they're blackballing him a little bit somehow?
Well, if you've seen, Cohen can't stay off like Twitter, and I think in September, sometime this past season, he tweeted about that the value of a prospect can end up being like five times worth what you invest in him. So he's always going to, like, you know, be down for that. And the problem is for MLB, there is a lawsuit going on between them and minor league players about payment that the minor league attorneys are using Cohen's tweet as part of their argument for why, like, look, like, everybody, we're not proposing something wild. Like, we have evidence that Major League Baseball owners are saying our clients are worth much more than their. So I really do believe that, like, it will work out fine with Cohen eventually. Like, his money will eventually speak. But I kind of think that, like, no one is upset that he's floundering and no one's going to reach out to, like, give him a hand.
That's interesting.
That I would say. Believe it or not.
So Alderson is not the problem.
No, he's the symptom of it. He wasn't supposed to be there on the second run this long. I think he's doing Cohen a favor that he's probably being well compensated for. Because at least if Alderson stays there, there's some continuity and respect. But, like, Alderson was supposed to be a quick, let me help you get rolling, and then I'm out. He's not even supposed to be there anymore. We are not even done with the Raiders. There's one more bizarre story to come, and of course.
Okay, sorry.
It's John Gruden. John Gruden may file a lawsuit against the Raiders on the argument that the secret emails released from the Washington football team investigation caused intentional interference with his contractual relationship with the Raiders. I just cannot believe the balls on this man. I cannot believe when you are independently wealthy enough to not need to work a day in your life. Like, this isn't like you lost your job and if you don't get, you know, some income soon, you're out on the street. Like, for John Gruden, like, days after this breaks, to be like, you know what, I think I'm going to sue. What the fuck is going on here? Do these people not have public relations? Yeah. Like, do they not care?
Right.
Is there a point where it doesn't matter what anyone thinks of you?
Yep.
I guess.
Well, I mean, his NFL career is over, as is his media career, don't you think?
What's left for him?
Yeah. Yeah, I always think people should squeeze whatever they can out of their employers.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, I don't even understand what the argument would be. Is the argument that the Raiders leaked the emails?
The argument is that somebody... Let me read it again. So the he's alleging that the emails were supposed to be secret, but that they weren't, and that somebody, I guess with the NFL, or he wants to file for like them to explain who released the emails, or I don't know if he's trying to blow out a whistleblower or something, but it's saying that because they were supposedly secret, but they were still released, that that violation somehow messed up his contract, like whatever, caused him to lose his job, something like that.
Yeah, I, you know, whatever.
How can you misread the room this badly? Like, even if you do think, you know what, somebody was out to get me, like, you did something, and this is what, like, in the Rugg story and the Arnett story, we're dealing with, like, and this may be too broad of a stretch, but I can't help on the surface noticing. We have two stories about young black athletes who are potentially facing like the end of their careers because of like crimes, mistakes, like whatever that they made. John Gruden was caught not in a criminal activity, but like was nailed on, wow, that's fucked up. Like, that's not something we want. And not only... is there really no, I mean, he lost the job, but like, you know, there's no, he doesn't.
This is about getting some kind of settlement, right? Some financial deal.
Yeah, and just, I know the difference obviously is Gruden didn't commit a crime and the other two people did. But again, there's that whole idea that, you know, like the logic.
I don't know, some of the playoff games he's coached have been crimes, I would say. You know, that was a criminal fucking performance.
There is the argument that, like, you know, any crime that the penalty is a fine for is, like, specifically a crime on the poor. And there's some kind of distinction here to me of, like, Gruden doing something wrong, and not only, like, someone in the media is going to rehire him. He's going to do his, you know, he's going to do his tour of apology or wherever.
Do you really think that's true?
100%. Fox will pick him up in a heartbeat because he's a victim of
cancel. Can we put money on this?
He's a victim of cancel culture. Fox will have him on the air in a year.
Yeah,
he'll start by doing college games. He'll start by doing college games, not big ones. They'll move him up a little bit. Then very quietly one year, Gruden will be on like the third team on Fox doing the NFL games. He will 1,000% be back.
Okay, I would like to put money on this.
Here we go.
There's no way he ends up on a Fox show and he's not sitting next to Steve Ducey. That's the only way that John Gruden
It is November 9th of 2021. I am telling you
how long
on the air.
What point?
John Gruden will be in an NFL booth in less than 3 years.
We should do like a before sunrise thing, or, you know. We'll come back to this exact spot in 10 years.
You got to wear the same clothes and everything. Yeah. Gruden will be in an NFL booth in fewer than 3 years. Guarantee you.
Wow. I think he's done. But
I would like to think so. That's interesting. I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, that's probably enough with the Raiders for one day.
The Raiders.
Do a little bit of NBA here. Are you ready to trade in your Jaylen Brown jersey for a Ben Simmons fit?
Yeah, okay. let me say something about this.
The most ridiculous story I've ever heard.
So it's so obvious what happened here, right? Clutch has a relationship with Shams. Mm-hmm. They released this story. It's an obvious, it's a standard media move designed to make your client look desirable. Right, to whatever it is, but put him back at the, you know, at the forefront of GM's minds and make him look like he's, you know, he's worth something, and there are teams that want him out there.
Mm-hmm.
There is no fucking way. Like, so the people, I'm not sure that everyone realizes this nationally, because if you don't follow the Celtics super closely, so literally within 20 minutes there was a response from a Celtics beat reporter named Mark Murphy. that was like, sources say the Celtics, there's no way in hell they're trading Jaylen Brown, basically. Right. Now, I'll just tell you, what happened is Mark Murphy called up Brad Stevens directly. I mean, you know, he's very well informed,
right,
connected to the team. Right, that right. was literally Brad Stevens or one of his closest assistants shooting this down instantaneously. Because there is no way, like, Jaylen Brown is so good and he's getting better. You know, it obviously would be insane. It's never going to happen. Fucking ridiculous. Stop trying to offend me. That's my message about this.
All right. Let me give you a slightly happier headline to chew into. The LA Lakers have not won a game in regulation this year without LeBron James. They pulled one out over the Hornets last night, but it has been a rough, rough start. LeBron is out injured. Russell Westbrook, unfortunately, is in and still Russell Westbrooking. Are you ready to put the fork in the Lakers now?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And so, first of all, I would just like to point out that the last two Russell Westbrook stops, we saw the same pattern for slightly different reasons.
Mm.
But he starts off not just slow, but he looks atrocious,
mm-hmm.
right? And then they figure it out at some point during the season. And then on top of that, given the situation with these Lakers and, you know, LeBron is going to come back at some point. Whether he can stay healthy for a full season, we'll have to see. But they're going to turn it around one way or another. They're, you know, obviously it feels like there are issues with this team and maybe they won't be able to fix them, you know, come playoff time. But it is way, way, way too early to write off a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Of course, right? You know, they won a championship 2 years ago. So I'm not going to overreact to that.
Yeah. Let me give you a little...
What about you?
I want them to be done. So that might be leaning me in this direction.
Do I have to stand up for the Lakers? I can't believe you're putting me in this
position. My master plan all along. I would say I'm down on the Lakers. I don't think that... you're right that Westbrook, the last in Washington and in Houston, like, was very effective, like, down the stretch for both teams. And certainly if he could do that in those circumstances, you would think clearly with LeBron and Anthony Davis there, he can do it again. And I suppose that he can. I just can't help thinking that, like, when you have that much age that you're invested in, like, I think if I...
Yeah, it can all fall apart very easily,
like, and it's
sure.
not a team, like, you're seeing it already now, like, not just LeBron. It's not a team that can lose any one of the old guys and replace him. Like, if LeBron is out, obviously they're cooked. If Anthony Davis is out, you know, Dwight Howard is not Anthony Davis. He's not close to Anthony Davis. There's no one there like Anthony Davis. If Westbrook goes out, they don't have another guard who can do any of the things that Westbrook can do. If Carmelo Anthony goes out, who's their bench scorer? He's been brilliant so far this year, like as a real offensive weapon coming off of the bench. They don't have that if he's gone. If any one of these guys is gone, you know, so yes, if they are healthy, if the playoffs come around, whatever seed they are, if they're healthy, I wouldn't want to play them. Like, they are not a team you would want to face. But they're also the team, and we saw it with them, you know, yeah, they won 2 years ago. The year before that with LeBron, he got hurt. They missed the playoffs. Last year, they were banged up. They're out in the first round. This year, they're older.
Yep.
He's already missed now some time with an injury. I mean, I know, like, the cliche is you say the Lakers are done, and then in 6 months, you have to be the asshole who's like, what was I thinking? But I'm going to call it today. Yeah, Lakers are done. I'm saying it right now.
They're all done. You know, so maybe people who said they were really going to miss Alex Caruso and Kontavious Caldwell-Pope were right.
Defense is a thing.
So that I
defense is a thing. Yeah. As the Knicks have been brilliant this year, but their defense has not been. And part of that, and we knew it coming in, like, Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier do a lot of great things that Alfred Payton and Reggie Bullock did not. But other than Kemba drawing charges, neither one of them is, like, at best an impact defender. And, you know, they can get torched sometimes by people. Defense is a thing.
I wanted to say something about the Warriors as well, but can we talk about the Knicks for a second? Just for a second. That's, I know you do it all the time. It's very funny because
I was actually about to ask you about the Warriors.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Ask
no,
me.
I'm always happy to take a Knicks detour. Don't worry.
Hey, I want to ask how you're feeling about Kemba, but I got to say this, and I know we have a lot of Knicks fan listeners, and I'm talking to one right now. Knicks fans are incredibly confident bunch. After one good season and a very good start, I don't think I've ever experienced anything quite like this. Like, I was talking about it with a friend here in Wisconsin. 2 years ago, you know, you were quiet and modest and, you know,
that's right.
It was like you would talk sheepishly about the team. Now, literally every player is going to the Hall of Fame and people are planning the championship parade. And it's not even a joke. Like the bing bong thing, and I got a lot of shit for saying ding dong, you know, 2 weeks ago. It's bing bong. I know. So the bing bong thing is people are deadly serious. In their heart of hearts, they are positive that this Knicks team is a real contender. I'm not sure I buy it yet, you know.
I'm going to tell you not only why that kind of attitude is valid.
Okay.
But is essential to the human condition.
Okay.
For all of us. I'm going to tell you right now the work that Knicks fans are doing for everybody. If you've ever been out driving and you traffic slows and you recognize that, like, okay, there's an accident and people are rubbernecking, like, the accident. It's annoying. Like, we all find it kind of annoying. If you want to get somewhere, it's very annoying. If you think of the alternative, if we lived in a world where people didn't stop and look at, like, these horrible things, like, that's terrifying. That would be such a cold, detached, like, if we didn't even stop to look at tragedy, like, what a monstrous species we would be. Knicks fans are similar in the sense that they have seen so much horror for so long, and yet their spirit stayed alive so that when there's any glimmer of hope, they have no fucking reason to believe in it. Everything about our experience tells us this is wrong. Lucy's going to pull the football away. We can't stop. We won't stop because we know what's like waiting for the rapture. Like, I didn't know this. I just read a story about a woman who saw some dude was hanging out of a window and he looked like Jesus. And she thought it was the rapture and she died. She like crashed her car and died believing that like the rapture was coming. Wow. That's very sad. But my point is, like, for Knicks fans, like, we keep waiting. Like, you don't know, you especially, as a Celtic fan, and I'll give you shit for one title in 30 whatever years, but as a Celtic fan, most teams, even if you're not the Celtics, you have no comprehension of being, like, take the worst of the Patino years.
No, yeah, fair. Okay, you know, now you've sold me.
All right. So the fact that we have any light, that there's... And really, I have to say, like, trust me, I research this shit all the time. This is the brightest Knicks turnaround in at least 30 years. Like, at least since Pat Riley came.
And yeah, they're a likable team.
And there's an argument to be made that they're more likable and that there's much more sustainable stuff going forward. Because that was basically Ewing and then putting, like... Everything was about winning now. This team has extra draft picks. This team has cap space. Like, they're likable. I don't care about bing bong, but you know what? These people have nothing. Like, I have to tell you, even tomorrow's my birthday. I turned 43, but I have one more.
Hey.
I have 20 more minutes to be 42. So let me say this. As a 42-year-old Knicks fan who has followed them, like, so closely every day of my life since I was, like, 11, anyone who didn't see the 99 Knicks, anyone whose fandom began after that, they have nothing. These people love, like, Steve Novak and Iman Shumpert. These are, like, cultural heroes to them. Because there's nothing else for them to cling to. So that's why where you see, like, where the hell is this coming from? It's coming from a deep, dark place. But these people deserve it, man.
Yeah. So I, by the way, I was Steve Novak was right next to me at this game, and I thought
I think you had a picture of him, didn't you?
I did. I put a picture on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
There was some like Knicks frat boy types who were like, yes. There was like eight of them. They were dominating a row. They were being very like obnoxious at the end of this game, and I was like, you know, I like you. I get it. I respect you. And, you know, they're talking a lot of shit. And the Midwesterners don't know how to handle this. I mean, they've never seen anything like this. You know, some fucking asshole from Great Neck or something. You know, I'm going, wow, I feel like I'm home again. So, you know, you've sold me and I do get it. How do you feel about Kemba now that you've had whatever it is, 10 games?
Kemba's fine. If the Knicks, I don't know, if the Knicks were paying Kemba Walker what the Celtics were paying him, I would have a lot of problems. But I'm actually working on a piece about this for the Strickland this week. If you take a look, the Knicks basically have a big three that is Randall, Barrett, and the combination of Rose and Walker. And neither one of those guys is cut out at this point to play 30-something minutes. But if you look at what Rose and Walker combined right now are putting up like 25 points, 6 assists. They're both shooting over 40% from three, I think. Rose got off to like a shockingly great start from there and has actually been still pretty good. I'm very happy with Kemba because, again, just seeing a point guard who can hit a three-pointer or sometimes drive to the basket. He doesn't drive as much as he used to when he was in Charlotte, but like when they beat Philadelphia the other night, it was a drive and one by him that kind of clinched the game. Kemba's fine. I suspect that Thibodeau is going to generally ride the hot hand. And even when Kemba has had some good games, like Rose has been brilliant again this season. If Rose is really good, you know, he's going to be out there late and that's fine. Kemba for $8 million a year is doing exactly what all you could ask for from him. They're basically paying him almost the same as what they paid Payton. Payton was like $5 million. And Kemba Walker can shoot. Kemba Walker can score. He can be abused on defense because of his size, definitely. But he drew, I looked it up, he drew more charges last year than I think the Knicks did as a team, or it was close. He's fine. $8 million a year, that dude is fine.
I mean, you know, I was watching him in Milwaukee, and he... what did he score? Like 6-7 points or...
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of where he's been at the last few games at least.
He's been hot and cold. He'll have two or three like knockdown, like he's hitting everything. Like a week ago, he was leading the league in three-point shooting. And then for like a couple of games, he can't hit anything. I think him and Randall are starting to figure each other out. I think Kemba will play better soon. But he's a role player and he fits his role absolutely fine.
It's just incredible. It's kind of sad. It makes me sad. I mean, I'll say this. So Brad, this was the first deal, obviously, that Brad Stevens made as general manager of the Celtics. And I had very mixed feelings about it at the time. Obviously, so Al Horford has been incredible since he came back. Really great.
Yes, he has.
Particularly on defense. On offense, you know, he's not as good as Robert Williams. He's not the same kind of threat.
Right.
But whatever, he's defending out of his... He's, you know, he's blocking a few shots a game, leaving the lead in blocks. And his contract is very, very manageable. And it's clear at this point, I think, that he made the right call, right? And the issue, of course, is that Kemba's knees mean that he probably will never be the same player, you know, that he was almost certainly ever again.
Yeah.
And that makes me sad, I guess. Yeah.
He was always his when he was in Charlotte, he was terrifying. Every time the Knicks had to go down and play the Hornets, like he was so quicksilver little guard, such a great shooter. And still, you know, he can play. But yeah, I hear you like you're saying, he's not, I mean, the reason he's on the Knicks is because he's not what he used to be. Otherwise, you know, I'm sure Boston would have held on to him or the Thunder would have tried to get something more for him. I did not realize until we just started this conversation the team that has the best record in the NBA. Do you know who that team is, Jonah Birch?
Yeah, it's the Golden State Warriors.
9-1. Now, I do an over-under betting thing with my friend every year, and
I
do not. I avoided Golden State because I didn't know what to make of them either way. 9-1. Did you think they were a title contender? Because Klay Thompson's not even back yet. Did you think they could be this good without Klay? And do you think they can win a title? Let's say Klay doesn't come back, or he's not. He's only like 50-60% of what he was. Can they still win?
I'm hesitant to make any predictions because invariably I'm going to be wrong. I am. They've been playing great, obviously, and they look great. I'm skeptical that it's sustainable to play at this, that, you know, Jordan Poole is going to be quite as good as he's been, for example, right?
Right.
You know, just to give one example, they look great. I would like to see a slightly larger sample, and I would like to see how Klay Thompson looks when he comes back before I make any predictions. If they're able to turn it around and sustain anything remotely at, you know, at this level going forward, given where they were at last year, it will be an astounding, amazing story, right? I mean, really an incredible story.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd have to think that Steve Kerr would be the coach of the year, right? There's a lot of basketball left. Presumably, you know, Draymond Green would be like the IDF basketball player of the year, right? You know, doesn't he love to go train with the Israeli Defense Force? Or
he does. He has, I believe. I believe he has done that. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see. You know, we'll see.
He's a critical thinker.
He is a critical thinker. That's exactly right. Yeah. They've looked great. Have you watched any of their games?
I have, yeah. When I've been able to see them, I love to watch them. And, you know, and it's funny because if you just read about, like, Twitter is such an alternate dimension. I kept seeing things about how, like, yeah, you know, Steph is, you know, yeah, he's making all these shots, but, like, he's taking more than he ever did. Like, there's always a slight hint of, like, some Steph Curry slander. And when I watch the games, man, like, he's doing fine. Like, Steph Curry is, whatever might be a problem with Golden State, it's not Steph Curry.
He just put up 50.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. He's been pretty good for a while.
He's an incredible player. He always
has to reprove himself.
Let me ask you this. Is part of it, and I understand there are other issues as well, that he's such a great outside shooter that people consistently underestimate the rest of his game? Is that part of it?
I think that is part of it. And I think it's also, he's such a great shooter that I think people, if you don't have a rooting interest in, like, really following Golden State closely, you're basically watching stuff sometimes like he's a carnival show. Like, I still find every time he takes a shot, I think it's going in. Literally every player I've ever seen before him, you know, Michael Jordan was great because he could make shots that, you know, looked like a high degree of improbability, but he wasn't like a brilliant outside. Like, you knew when Michael Jordan shot a three, he was probably going to miss it. LeBron James, for most of his career, like, not the best out. Like, guys have things that whatever. Every single time Steph Curry takes a shot from within half court, like, I think it's going in. So I think I'll watch games and be like, boy, Steph sucks. And then I'll see that he's like 7 for 12. He doesn't suck. It's just, you know, I think he has become like kind of Ruthian in the eyes of a lot of people. Because unless you're watching Golden State a lot, you're probably seeing mostly highlights. And if you're seeing highlights,
right,
you're seeing him hit crazy shots. And to be fair, if you just put on a game, you'll see him hit crazy shots. But then anytime he misses, you're like, huh? They're really interesting. I don't know what to make of them. I heard a lot of Jordan Poole hype coming into the season. It seems so far to be.
He's looked great. He's
looking good.
You know, I think he's scoring 18 a game or something. I don't even know.
He had a big game again the other night. I don't know. They are really, really good.
You think they're a championship contender?
I thought all year that I had to wait and see if Klay could get back to his usual level, his old level. But now I'm wondering, like, okay, if Poole really can score well, and Wiggins is, like, kind of what Harrison Barnes used to be for them, and they have young talent. They have Kuzminga, they have Moody, Wiseman, whenever he's around. I mean, it's not like a West where there's some other team that's such a given that I can't see Golden State doing it. Like, in certain old Wests, I would say no, but, like, this year, I guess I've come around and decided, yeah, I think they are.
Let me ask you this about Klay. Besides Kevin Durant, who is inhuman,
right?
Can you think of another player, another basketball player, who has ever suffered that level of catastrophic injury back-to-back and come back and been remotely the same player? Certainly the first year, but ever. You know,
not back-to-back.
I mean, there are people who've had... Say it again?
Not back-to-back. Like, Kobe had...
Derrick Rose or...
Kobe had devastating. He had the Achilles very, very late, and I basically put a fork in him. What's his name? Bernard King tore his ACL when that was like career ending, and he came back and he made another All-Star team, but he didn't have an ACL by itself or the Achilles by itself are like enormous. I can't even remember someone. I think Kobe had two really bad leg or foot injuries late. I can't think of that many guys who've had both of those. And certainly the only players I remember, I think I read the only players who've had ACL surgery or the Achilles and come back is like Dominique. Dominique Wilkins made an All-Star team, but I think it was ACL. I don't remember if it was Achilles or his ACL. I think it was his ACL. Nobody's had what Klay's had. I cannot think of a single player who's had both of those things. And for a guy who is so good at, like, moving off the ball and who had a tremendous amount of value as an on-ball defender, he used to guard Chris Paul, he used to guard Lillard, he used to guard the opponent's, like, point guards and do really well against them. But then my question is, if they're playing this well, and they're not like the Durant teams, but if they're like that 15-16 run where Andrew Wiggins can do what Harrison Barnes did, like, he can be a... You know, tertiary scorer. He's athletic. Draymond is a force.
See, anytime you're trying to sell me on Andrew Wiggins,
I know it wasn't the best opening. It wasn't the best opening.
I mean, Damon Lee. You want to sell me on him? I'm interested.
But don't you think? Okay, 7 years ago, if Harrison Barnes is on any team besides Golden State. And I'm telling you, like, well, I think he could play a role on a championship. But you might be like, don't try to sell me on Harrison Barnes. I feel like Wiggins in that context specifically, like, P.J. Armstrong is not, oh, there's a championship point guard. But if you put him on the Bulls, he can be. Andrew Wiggins isn't going to be a champion on the Knicks because they would need him to be more than he is. But don't you think on Golden State, I'm asking you, is Andrew Wiggins any less of a man than Harrison Barnes?
It's funny because in my head, Harrison Barnes is such a better player. And I don't actually... I mean, maybe they had some similar issues. I don't know. Look, they were both very hyped coming into the league.
Very much so.
Andrew Wiggins has a lot of stuff going on that have prevented him from taking advantage of his incredible talent and... Mm-hmm. Athleticism. I'm not.
Harrison Barnes didn't have that level of
issues, right? You know.
No, he was a different case.
I mean, I'm looking at his stats. So right before he goes to Dallas and becomes an almost 20 point per game scorer, his last year in Golden State, you know, he scores 11 points a game on. 47% shooting. He shoots 38% from three. I mean, I don't know. I guess Andrew Wiggins is better than that. So
I think he's capable of that.
Yeah.
Is all.
For sure.
All right. Well,
we'll see. I appreciated that Klay Thompson, in one of his Halloween hype video dressed up as Larry Bird. I thought a lot about it. You know, Larry Bird has publicly praised Clay Thompson a couple times. I wonder if they know each other through Clay Thompson's dad. That's possibly my question.
Certainly possible. Yeah.
Wish there was a way to find that out. Maybe I will, direct message Clay Thompson, and I'm sure he'll respond to that, you know, so we'll get it.
He's the kind of dude that might.
He might, actually. That's true.
Did you ever see when he was...
scaffolding interview?
Yeah. I was just going to bring that up. Yeah, Clay Thompson was... The Warriors were in town, I think, to play the Knicks, and he was in Brooklyn walking down the street, and something happened that... Like, there was a building issue, or something happened where there was... The news was there to cover it, and the reporter didn't know who Clay Thompson was. And so Clay Thompson is, like, speaking to this reporter, and I try to remember
what the... sometimes I look up...
The Chiron, I try to remember, it didn't even say his name. It just said, like pedestrian. Like, it was Clay Thompson.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. It was so funny. He's really, he's always been one of my favorites.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
an interesting person. So then they interviewed him about the interview, and he's like, you know, interesting topic. And you're like, is it an interesting topic? I'm not sure it is.
All right. I would say that when we are diving into the Harrison Barnes versus Andrew Wiggins, it's probably time to wrap the show. So I'm going to say that that's the end of today's episode.
So much more to get into next time about the NBA. We're just beginning.
Absolutely. Remember, you can follow Jonah on Twitter at JonahB1793. And I'm on Twitter, too, at MMiranda613. You can follow the Jackman Sports Show on Twitter at Jackman Sports. Email any thoughts or questions or recipes to us at JackmanSports@gmail.com. Our producer is the one, the only, Connor Gillies. That's all for episode 38. Thanks for joining us, and we will see you pretty soon. Bye.